Hi, I'm Ji-Pan, and welcome to China Economy Podcasts, the podcast about Chinese economy reforms and challenges. This is a mini-series of 10 episodes, and today's theme is, should we be worried about Chinese debt level? First, let me say a few words about the genesis of this project. I'm a big fan of podcasts, especially the podcasts that do storytelling such as Blind Money, Science Versus, and Startup. I was financial officer at the French Treasury based in Beijing for 2 years and left recently. And having left the Treasury, I had 2 months of break before starting a new position. So I thought, well, it could be really cool to work on a side project like creating a podcast. The topic seems quite obvious from the beginning. I'd spent 2 years working on it, and I'm very passionate about it. Chinese economy. We'll see where this project goes, and I hope that you and I will have fun on the way. And by the way, I'm French, so sorry for the accent, but a friend of mine told me it was cute.
这个钱我跟你讲，我也雇你，我也雇日子都特别放心啊。
That was my very loving grandma, and we are having a very unusual discussion between a grandma and a grandson. I'm trying to convince her to withdraw her savings from a fund in my home region Zhejiang that promises an annual return of 18%. Having spent most of my life in Europe, 18% seems crazy. Well, to be fair, it is high even in China. Especially if you compare it to the 1.3% interest that the banks offer for 1 year deposits. And let me say a few words about how the fund works, or at least what I understood. I was obviously very surprised and confused by the 18% return and wanted to know more. I figured out that the fund manages savings from mostly elder persons, and let me tell you how my grandparents got involved. They were contacted by former colleagues who gathered all his friends and told them about the glorious opportunity to put their savings in these funds. Couple of meeting letters, my grandparents were convinced and invested a large chunk of their savings. I was really curious to know in what kind of assets the fund invested in to deliver such a high return. And the luck was on my side. The fund offers the opportunity to its investors to spend a couple of days in a farm where it has invested. Yes, in a farm. So my grandparents, my cousin and I went to spend 3 days at this farm. And it is where I figured out that the farm was producing eggs. Yes, eggs. And 80% return. I might be a little risk averse, I'm Asian after all, but I was a little worried for my grandparents. The reason that I'm worried for my grandparents' savings are pretty much the same reason that one could be worried about the Chinese economy. A very high debt level, a constraint to deliver high return of growth in a slowing economy. Ultimately, if you're wondering about the future of Chinese economy, debt is the single most important thing that you have to keep an eye on. So let's find out in this first episode if we should be worried about Chinese debt level and what happened to my grandparents' saving. We will answer in this first podcast to the following question. First, how high is Chinese debt level? Second, how did the debt level evolve? Third, what are the risks behind the increase in leverage? Covering this question, we will discuss the decade-long debate between two of the most prominent experts on Chinese economy. Moreover, we will be discussing the specific risk behind state-owned enterprise debts. And fourth, what the government can and will do about the debt level. The IMF releases each year a report on the state of the economy of every country member, with a very poetic name of Article 4. I have the 2016 report on China in my hand. Well, it's not Piketty's book, but still around 100 pages detailed economic reports. And year after year, the report pointed out that the high level of debt in China is a source of vulnerabilities. According to David Lipton, Deputy Managing Director of the IMF, China debt problem is serious, growing, and he underlines that corporate debts require key attention.
Corporate debt pile was serious, that it was growing, and that it required immediate attention.
So let's take a look at the data and see what is the IMF talking about. And let's answer to the question, how high is China's debt level? But first, what is debt? Debt can be simply defined as the amount of money that the lender has lent to a borrower. In China, there is not a unique definition of the debt level, and numbers fluctuate for 2015 between 220% and 260% of GDP, depending on the source and what is included in the calculation. The People's Bank of China, China Central Bank, publishes a set of data called the Total Social Financing, 社会融资总量, that sums up the situation from the lender perspective. Using the data, we can compute the Chinese debt is about 250% of GDP. We will not go right now in the detail of the composition of the debt, because it's really technical and I don't want you to get lost. But let's just say that the biggest part of this debt has been lent by banks, which represent 140% of GDP. Is 250% of GDP of debt worrying? Well, not necessarily. If you look at most developed countries, their debt level is at comparable level. For example, G20 countries' debt to non-financial institutions is around 230% of GDP, and they have smaller growth potential. Conclusion. Chinese debt level is around 250% of GDP, which doesn't seem too high by international standards. Next, how did the debt level evolve? I have a graph of Chinese debt level in front of my eyes, and I can easily point with my fingers at the precise date when things started to go crazy. And this is 2008.
We're in the midst of a serious financial crisis, and the federal government is responding with decisive action.
Remember, 2008, toxic assets in the US, Lehman Brothers going down, triggering a world economic crisis. At the time, Chinese government has unleashed the most massive economic stimulus plan in its history.
The size of the stimulus plan was 4 trillion yuan.
Yes, a 4 trillion yuan investment plan financed by the state-owned banking system and mostly carried out by the state-owned enterprise and local governments. The amount of credit in the economy has increased significantly, and banking and non-banking loans has financed numerous projects, not necessarily with interesting returns. Anyway, this is what was needed to save Chinese and world economy. And this is really important. Until today, the debt increase trend has not stopped. Conclusion, the debt level has increased significantly since 2008, and the debt building trend did not stop. After a short break, what are the risks behind the increase in debt level? Welcome back to the show. Before the break, we've seen that the Chinese leverage has increased significantly, which leads to the question, what are the risks behind the increase in leverage? If we take a look at the history, a lot of countries that had high debt growth for more than 5 years ended up with a banking crisis. Everything was alright as far as the debt kept growing, but when the engine stopped, the leverage started to backfire. Most of the long-time followers of China are aware of the ongoing debate between two of the most prominent commentators on Chinese economy, Nicolas Lardis and Michael Pettis. Following the debate is like witnessing a hypothetical battle between Yoda and Darth Vader, except there were articles and sharp arguments instead of using. And this debate has been going on for years without so far a clear winner. First, who are they? Both are professors. That is senior fellow at the Peterson Institute of International Economics. And Bedis has a financial background and teaches at Beijing University. Both are highly respected in the economic community, and however, the two hold a radically different view on Chinese growth future. What is the debate about? Before dealing with this question, all my apologies, because I'll try to summarize in a few minutes a debate with dozens of articles written by very clever person backing the site. Because of that, I might not be fully accurate. So, what is the debate about? Lardy holds that Chinese economy is not so much in a bad shape, and even though the economy has some clear weaknesses, the slowdown is mostly manageable. Furthermore, China has some buffers against a high landing. First, Lardy argues that the combined rates of household corporation and governments approaches 50% of GDP, significantly higher than any other economy in recorded history, and capable of financing debt increase. Second, he says that the vast majority of the debt is held in domestic currency rather than in foreign currency. Thus, Chinese debt does not involve any significant currency mismatch and makes foreign exchange crisis less probable. Remember, Chinese external debt is only at 8% of GDP. Third, the majority of this debt has been extended by banks. And China's systematically important banks are financed almost entirely by deposits and are state-owned. Pettis agrees with all three points, so neither Pettis nor Lardy are worried about a banking crisis. But the disagreement lies in the expected effects of the debt dynamics on the economy. To put it in simple terms, Pettis argues that the debt increase is fine in a growing economy. However, if the debt increase is only financing an artificial growth, that can be very dangerous. Indeed, in this case, when China will finally deleverage, the debt will be a huge burden on growth. Pettis claims that without the debt dynamics, the GDP growth would be around 3 to 4% a year. According to him, due to its debt, China is very likely to be in the same situation as Japan in the early 90s, and will only be able to deliver weak growth. Japan, indeed, had a very fast growing debt level in the 80s and ended in the 90s in 25 years of very slow growth known as lost decades. Conclusion. Both experts argue that China is not likely to face a banking crisis. The real disagreement lies in the vision of the effect of debt on growth. In line with his perception of the debt dynamics in China, Pettis predicts a quite gloomy future for Chinese economy. In order to answer to the question about the risk behind the increase in leverage, it is also really important to value the repayment capability of the borrower. Remember, the IMF said that corporate debt is a big problem. And among the 250% of GDP of debt, about 170% is borrowed by corporates. Besides, the majority of debt, about 100%, is borrowed by state-owned enterprise, Guoyuqiye, also known as SOEs. They are on average less profitable and more in debt than private companies. And, well, what happens in a market economy when a bank makes a loan decision? Let's say that I run China Economic Podcast LLC and I want to ask a loan to my bank in order to hire a producer, or at least to pay him a beer. The bank will look at my income and my assets and grant me the loan if I'm profitable and have collateral. This is not what is happening with a lot of SOEs in the industrial sector. Those companies are getting bank financing despite their poor performances. Conclusion. Corporate debt, and especially SOEs debt, seems to be particularly risky, because some of the companies are actually not in a position to reimburse their debts. More on that in a later episode on SOEs that I tried to release this month.
No! Why not? Do! or do not. There is no try.
Next, what the government can and will do about the debt level. What the government can do to stop the debt building seems quite simple on paper. It would look like something like that. Slowing down investments, especially investment in overcapacity sectors such as coal and steel. Reform state-owned enterprises to allow non-profitable firms to exit the markets. Reform banking sector to end the implicit guarantees that allow SOEs to benefit from cheap funding, even if they are not profitable. It is more or less what the international organization suggests. It does look simple on paper, but it is hard to implement. What will the Chinese political leaders do? This is a tricky question. Before we answer to this question, it is important to make a point on Chinese political regime. The Chinese regime is what we can call bureaucratic authoritarian. This means that China is not a democracy. But this means also that it is not a dictatorship, because ultimate authority resides not in individual leaders, but in the Communist Party where there is debate. Going back to our question, what will the Chinese political leaders do? The danger of the debt dynamic is very much discussed inside the Communist Party. On May 9th, People's Daily, Chinese Communist Party newspaper, has published a front page interview of an authorized but anonymous figure pointing out the risk behind the debt increase in China. The publication of this article in the official media can be considered to be fully endorsed by the Chinese government and has had a very important media coverage. It is possible that the reason of the publication lies in the very important debate inside the Communist Party between the reformers and the conservatives. It seems very likely that the reformers, in large number in the central government, wanted to address a message to the conservatives, urging them to support significant reforms. Indeed, reforms such as SOEs reforms and slowing down investment could reduce Chinese leverage and be beneficial for long-term growth. However, and this is what the conservatives have in mind, the reforms could lead to social upheavals and slow-term growth. Just imagine the potential layoff in question if non-profitable SOEs were to close. Interestingly enough, we very likely had another demonstration of the internal debate on the conduct of the economy when the growth target for 2016 was published in March. Indeed, for the first time, the Chinese government has published a range as its growth targets, between 6.5 and 7%. And this is very likely due to the fact that it was difficult for everyone to reach an agreement on a single number. Reformers in central government willing to go for a lower number, whereas conservatives, mostly in local governments, wanted a higher growth target. It might be unlikely to observe a very clear-cut decision for reforms before the renewal of most of the members of the Standing Committee at the end of 2017. Although it is very difficult to weigh political forces. So let's summarize. Chinese debt level is high but not exceeding the level of most developed countries, and the level by itself is not so worrying. However, the debt level has increased significantly since 2008 and the debt building trend did not stop. Even if the risk of a banking crisis seems manageable, the risk of very slow growth when China will start to deleverage seems likely. The implementation of a deleveraging roadmap is very uncertain due to political pressure and social risks. And about my grandma?
可以放一部分，但是一大部分还是要留着。另
对
对, 对，
我也这样想，有那次的有就不得给他少放点，就是说。
She agreed to withdraw the saving from the fund and to set up for more realistic returns. That was China Economy Podcast. I wanted to thank Thomas Graziani, Su Weitong, Angie, Aga Schimbler, who supported me for the production of this first episode. A very special thanks to my grandma and to Jesse Appel, a friend from my improv to Beijing Improv, who sent me his song that I use as a theme for the show. This song is, I believe, the first macroeconomics rap song. And as you know, most rap songs are about microeconomics. It's always about this yacht, about this bottle of champagne. Well, Jesse's song is about macroeconomics, and even better, Jesse's song is about China macroeconomics and is bilingual. A perfect fit for the show. And if you want to check the lyrics and the MV, search on YouTube Great Lord of China, More Money, More Fada, which means development. See you on the next episode.雷震有 bling， 凤眼蛇尾 all up in this place， 鸦片战争遍地都混乱，这西洋的 throne in my box is in the spot， 铁路抗议帝国压力， how's the player gonna fight down his 经济， 100 days are for 脱裤子放屁， we need a better economic policy， things all changing since John hit the block， he and his 民国 mess the chain up， 民主社会经济的拓展，开始学资本主义的思想，内战二战社会主义发展，毛泽东建立新中国的现象。